Tonight on the Daily Debrief, an accused Russian spy pleads guilty. Plus,
you shut your mouth and let her talk.
A family feud after a husband is killed and his wife marries his friend, the admitted trigger man. Is she guilty as well? Also, a serial killer brags about killing 90 people over four decades. That's tonight on the Daily Debrief for Thursday, December 13th.
And good evening, everybody. A Florida woman today decided not to take the stand in her own defense on charges she was involved with the murder of her husband 18 years ago. We are calling it the so-called Love Triangle murder trial. Denise Williams of Florida faces charges for allegedly planning to murder her husband, Mike Williams. Mike had a friend named Brian Winchester. Winchester testified he was the shooter. He married Denise Williams after her husband, Mike, was out of the way. Here's some of the backstory. Mike Williams disappeared on a duck hunting trip in the year 2000. Back then, people thought he drowned and was maybe even eaten by alligators. Normally, it takes 5 years for Florida authorities to declare a missing person dead. Denise Williams sought that designation after only 6 months so that she could collect her husband's life insurance policy, valued at $1.75 million. Testimony is complete and closing arguments will occur tomorrow. Witness testimony, however, revealed that Denise Williams and her husband were in a deteriorating marriage, at least in the opinion of a friend and coworker.
They were just a little bit more direct.
What do you mean by that?
What are you doing? I need something. You need to go do it.
Okay, folks, not sure exactly what happened to that one. We are going to go back to listen to some other testimony now. That first witness basically said, hey, look, there were phone calls, there were discussions where Denise Williams was berating almost her husband, the victim, saying, look, bring me food, put gas in my car. And that was the extent of their relationship. We're going to move on now because remember, this was originally deemed an accident. The victim's brother testified that defendant, Denise Williams, did not appreciate Mike's family's attempts to seek renewed attention on the case.
She wasn't happy about the newspaper article that had, mom had finally had some success and got a little blurb, a little article in the Democrat. Talking about Mike and what mom was doing to try to get some more attention to the case, get an investigation going. She said at the time she did not.
Who's she?
Denise. Okay. Said she didn't want to hear his name again, didn't want to see anything in the paper about him again, that didn't want to know anything that mom was doing about Mike. She needed to get on with her life. Denise was very angry. She really did not want to know anything, hear anything about Mike again.
Was she yelling at y'all?
It was to the point of a little bit of yelling, yes.
Yeah. Trying to discourage you from doing newspaper articles and getting an investigation?
Any kind of publicity, any kind of real investigation to try to find Mike. We were a little stunned, both of us, that she would react in that way. We were just trying to find Mike. We, I guess, thought she'd want to do the same thing.
The mother of victim Mike Williams described the same incident. She further testified that she never gave up pushing for an investigation into what really, in her mind, caused her son's death.
The initial theory was that he was missing and possibly eaten by alligators.
Right.
You never believed that, did you?
No, sir. I had been trying to get publicity for Mike's disappearance. When the article came out in the newspaper, Denise called me on the phone. She was livid. She said, you and Nick need to come over here right now. We went to her house. In the front yard, we weren't even invited inside. She was screaming at me. She was mad about the article. And she said, screaming at me, I don't ever want to hear Mike's name again. I don't ever want to see Mike's picture in the paper again. I don't ever want to know anything you're doing about Mike again. I have to get on with my life. And I asked her, I said, if that were Ansley in the lake, you would just leave her there? And she said, I would believe the authorities. Then she said, if you persist in trying to get a criminal investigation, you will lose Ansley.
Your granddaughter.
My granddaughter.
Mike's daughter.
Mike's daughter.
Sometime later, another incident occurred, this one involving Brian Winchester, the man who was sleeping with Denise Williams, the man who pulled the trigger. The second incident even included a threat about the victim's daughter.
Denise sits down at the table. Mom is already sitting at the table. Brian and I are standing. And again, Denise is obviously angry. The main thing that I remember from the conversation is her saying, why are you lying about us? Why are you telling all these lies about us all over town? And we want you to stop.
Did she make any threatening remarks?
She said, if you do not stop this investigation, which we had finally, that led to the whole occasion, we finally had an investigation going, then, you know, she said, we both, Ansley and I, love you, but, you know, you're not going to see her anymore if you don't get this investigation stopped.
So she tells you that you need to stop the investigation or you're not going to see Ansley?
Yes.
Who's Ansley?
Her daughter, my niece, mom's granddaughter.
Mike's daughter.
Mike's daughter.
And once again, the victim's mother was present for that second incident.
Nick and I got home, and Denise came. She knocked on the door. We opened the door, and Brian was with her.
Brian being Brian Winchester?
Brian Winchester. And I asked her, I said, where's Ansley? Because I thought she was bringing Ansley to see me. And she said, Ansley's taking a nap. Well, we invited her inside, and she sat down at the table across from me. Nick was standing, and Brian had his back to the door.
And what did Denise tell you?
Denise said, Cheryl, you know that Ansley and I love you, but Brian and I don't like the lies you're telling about us. And I looked at her and I said, Denise, what lies are you talking about? Brian screamed, you shut your mouth and let her talk. Nick got upset and said some not nice things to Brian. And then Denise is crying and she says, Cheryl, if you will just stop this investigation, you can see Ansley again. And I told her, I said, Denise, I can't stop this investigation. I wouldn't if I could. Nick said, Denise, Mike is Mama's son and my brother, and we just want to know what you and Brian did to him. Brian said, Denise, let's go. We're not getting anywhere. And they left.
Let's open up this particular piece of information to the panel discussion. Attorney Michael Bryant is with me tonight here on the Daily Debrief. Juvenile Court Judge Ashley Wilcott is also here on the debrief to break this down. So, Michael, let me start with you. This sounds like a family feud that's originating from this really heated discussion we just heard about.
Yeah, and it really leads the jury to come up with one of two reasonable conclusions. Either Denise Williams truly felt like, I got to move on, and I just don't want to hear anything about my missing, now dead husband, or she wants it stopped because it's going to lead to her. Which is more reasonable? The jury's gonna have to figure it out.
Okay, yeah, the big question is, what evidence do we have that links back to this particular defendant? So Judge Wilcott, let me toss this out your way. The state's gotta prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. What do they really have linking Denise Williams to this crime? Because the trigger man admitted he's the trigger man.
And I think that's the obstacle that they have in this case, is they have to connect her to the actual murder. And there's very little evidence to do that. The trigger man says it so, but nobody else does. So I'm just not certain they're going to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, I mean, really, and again, Ashley, I'll ask you this question as well. Is this consciousness of guilt that we're seeing come out of this family and in this interaction? I mean, the person that the mother said really lashed out, and we could hear the anger in her voice as she's relating that conversation. That all came out of the trigger man. That all came out of Winchester. That didn't directly come out of Denise.
That's right, absolutely. And it's a very sad case. It's tragic, and the jury's going to feel very sympathetic to Cheryl Williams, who lost her son and wanted to know what happened and then found out he'd been brutally murdered. But that may not be enough to convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that Denise Williams was involved when you have a trigger man who actually did the murder.
Okay, Michael, we've got a couple of different charges here. We've got connections to the murder. We've got the insurance money. Is it possible we'll see a split verdict here?
You know, it's possible, but remember, they're going forward only on the main charge of the murder and conspiracy. The lesser charges are not an issue, which I think is critical. I think the prosecution is very smart in saying we're going for it all here, which I think lessens the chance of a split verdict.
Okay, so they're going for it all here, but again, I mean, there's a tenuous thread. I mean, we want to look at this and think that she might have had something involved with it, but that's not the burden of proof here.
That's right. And, you know, again, if you're going to do some jury nullification here, the sympathy element is huge. They got a guy on the stand who's walking for shooting his best friend in the face, and the only one the jury has to point at now is the wife of the dead guy. Is there enough for them to get past any sort of sympathy and nail her?
Yeah, look, we're going to move on to listen to some other testimony now, folks. Let's compare the previous witnesses we just listened to, the mother, the brother. Let's compare that to this testimony from the admitted trigger man. He said he only picked up rumors of what his lover, Denise Williams, was doing after her husband's death.
We had prearranged that obviously our communication needed to be minimal, both by phone and in person. Obviously, we weren't going to be meeting up in parking lots and having sex and doing all that was normal for us to be doing. Denise kind of sequestered herself up in her bedroom and didn't want to be around a lot of people during that time, which was smart of her to do. And so I got a lot of information from Kathy, but eventually, you know, she and I talked. And there never was a conversation that was like, well, did it all go according to plan? Or, you know, first of all, I didn't want to talk about that because that was not the plan. What happened with Mike was not the plan that Denise and I had come up with.
Let me stop you right there. I want to make it clear. The plan didn't play out the way you wanted to, but it certainly wasn't the plan that you and Denise had discussed to actually have him killed.
The plan was for his death to occur, but it was not for it to occur in the way that it did. I mean, the plan was for him to fall in the water and for him to have a chance to survive it. But obviously that's not what happened, and I didn't want to tell Denise that.
Listen to how the prosecutor jumped into that discussion and focused the attention back on the defendant. He didn't let that witness take the full blame for this crime. And of course, that witness has the immunity agreement. A tension between Denise Williams and Brian Winchester eventually turned back towards the money.
She assumed that what we talked about, the plan that we had made, she assumed that that was what had happened. It wasn't until years later that I tried to and somewhat told her that that's not what ended up happening.
Okay. So at some point you and her started talking again despite the distances. When was that?
The first time, I'd be guessing. I mean, I would say a few days before we talked. I'm sure the first time we talked was just on the phone. It was a little while before I saw her in person because I remember being kind of nervous, I just knew it would be weird to see her because of what we had done. I just knew it would be weird to see her after that, kind of to face each other after that. The concern between she and I then became, well, if his body's not found, what's going to happen with the life insurance?
And we're back to that question of the money. So we'll bring the panel back into this part of the discussion. Judge Wilcott, I want to ask you this. We've got Brian Winchester up on the stand, and he's distancing himself from Denise Williams, the woman on trial here, in the months after the husband's disappearance. There's distance. That's what he's trying to inject into this. Now, the victim's family, in the previous testimony, is trying to say, wait a minute, no, Winchester and Williams, they were thick as thieves. So which is it? Is there distance? Or is this all a big scheme that they cooked up?
I think it's a scheme that they cooked up. But I think the fact of the matter is it doesn't matter if there was distance between them after the fact or not. It still doesn't take away from what he says happened in terms of them planning this murder.
Okay, Michael Bryant, let me turn back to you here. The victim's family, you know, saying that they were thick as thieves here, distance or not, what do you think?
Well, I think their goal, whether they're consciously aware of it or not, is to link her to the actions that took place that night that he was murdered. What I think is an interesting angle is that, remember, the plan was not to shoot him in the head. The plan was for his waders to fill up with water and him sink to the, you know, have a watery grave. That was it. So at what point does it become Brian Winchester's murder versus the help from the defendant in this case? I think there can be some confusion created in the minds of the jury if the defense wants to go that way.
Is the money enough in this case?
It doesn't. I think it's a strong connection. It is a strong connection, and the fact she wanted him declared dead quickly, more quickly than the law normally allows, so that she could get the money. That's huge.
Okay, well, still ahead tonight on the Daily Debrief, we have one more story we want to bring up. The woman accused of spying for the Russian government by infiltrating a gun rights organization pleads guilty. Plus, this man claims he killed 90 people, and he's back in court. That's next on the Daily Debrief. Welcome back, folks. Yet another person with links to Russian interference in U.S. politics has had her day in court. Alleged Russian spy Maria Butina pleaded guilty today in federal court to conspiracy to act as an illegal foreign agent. Butina was accused of trying to infiltrate Republican-affiliated political groups, such as the National Rifle Association, in order to bolster communication between GOP heavyweights and the Russian government. She will learn her sentence in February. President Trump this morning on Twitter trashed his former personal attorney, Michael Cohen. A federal judge yesterday sentenced Cohen to 3 years in prison on a series of financial and campaign finance charges. Cohen admitted he lied to Congress about a potential Trump deal in Moscow and said he arranged payouts to two women who claimed to have had affairs with the president. Trump tweeted that he never directed Cohen to break the law, emphasizing that Cohen was a lawyer who was supposed to know the law. Trump further accused Cohen of pleading guilty to certain charges solely to embarrass the presidency. And now to Anthony Velez with other incidents making headlines.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawAndCrime.com and across the country. Authorities in Texas released footage of the daring moments a trio of officers caught an 8-year-old boy jumping from his burning home. The officers with the Balch Springs Police Department can be seen initially responding to the fire at an apartment complex on Quail Drive, alerting residents to the danger. That's when officers discovered a mother, Keisha Sowles, and her son, 8-year-old Kingston, trapped in a second-floor apartment.
I didn't know this. It's okay, buddy. It's okay.
No injuries were reported, and the cause of the fire is under investigation. The former California judge who lost his seat on the bench following a recall election after he gave convicted sex offender Brock Turner a light sentence is reportedly seeking donations to pay off $135,000 in court-ordered attorney's fees. Former Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge Aaron Persky was removed from the bench following public outrage over the 6-month sentence given to Turner, who sexually assaulted an unconscious student outside a campus fraternity party at Stanford University in 2015. Now Persky is soliciting donations to pay court-ordered attorney fees related to the recall election. A suspected serial killer who claims he killed about 90 people over a 4-decade span pleaded guilty for the murder of a Texas woman in 1994. 78-year-old Samuel Little was convicted in 2014 for killing 3 women in Los Angeles in the late 1980s and reportedly confessed to killing dozens of women since 1970 as he moved around the country. Investigators link Little to 36 cold case killings so far, making him one of the most prolific serial killers in American history. Little pleaded guilty to murder and the killing of Denise Christie Brothers in the West Texas city of Odessa in 1994. Little received another life term in prison as part of the plea agreement. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
Back now to the Denise Williams love triangle murder case. Here, the admitted trigger man answers questions from the jury about whether he and Denise Williams planned to split the victim's life insurance.
Was there a plan for you to gain access to or a portion
of the insurance funds individually?
No, sir. All of the Denise was the beneficiary, the only beneficiary in all the policies, as well as all their personal assets, as well as the Social Security. I mean, in total, it was about $2.25 million that she stood to receive in total. I was not the beneficiary on any of it. But of course, we knew that eventually when we ended up together, that I would secondhand benefit, I guess you could say. But I didn't have any direct benefit or legal entitlement to any of the money. And even when we got married, Denise kept the vast majority of her assets in her name.
Let's go back to the panel one last time for analysis. So, Attorney Michael Bryant, can the jury just look at this and turn around and say, okay, well, that guy, Winchester, wanted sex, and this defendant, Denise Williams, wanted sex and money, and those sound like two good motives. She was in on it.
It's pretty good. It sounds pretty strong. I think it's disingenuous for him to say, well, I wasn't the beneficiary on those policies. She was going to get all the money. At one point, he even
she
testified.
She would have been taking him out to dinner, buying a mansion, all this, that, and the other thing.
At one point, he even said, it was about love between us, and the money was just a bonus. That's one heck of a bonus, I'll tell you that.
Oh, gosh. I mean, the defense can attack that tomorrow, of course, during closing arguments. Judge Ashley Wilcott, I know you're still there. Let's talk about where they might go in closings tomorrow. They might go that direction. They might also really drive home issues about corroboration. Is there really enough evidence that that guy on the stand, the trigger man, and this defendant, Denise Williams, were conspiring to commit this crime?
I think defense has a really good argument that there's not enough evidence. And here's why. Because they can say, hey, the trigger man, the person who did it, says she was involved. But absent that, all you have are innuendos and the family saying, oh, she was acting differently. Her bad behavior. Is bad behavior enough to connect it? Maybe not.
Well, you know, look, I mean, there's a couple different ways people can react to things. The cross-examination went that way. Maybe she felt cornered by the trigger man. She learned later on that he had actually shot the victim in the face, so maybe she was afraid of him. Maybe that's where all the discussion about the daughter came in.
That's right. There's no way to know, and so I do think it could create reasonable doubt. That's what I would argue is the defense.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of leeway for both sides to go in this. I am anxiously awaiting these closing arguments starting tomorrow here on the Law and Crime Network. I know you will be watching them closely. Judge Ashley Wilcott, Attorney Michael Bryant, you better be watching them.
I will be.
Even
yes,
though
sir.
I don't think you're going to be here tomorrow. So look, this is going to be really interesting, and I'm sure we'll see some of the law issues, the law questions sealed up. It's all the time we have tonight on the Daily Debrief. Again, closing arguments tomorrow, coverage beginning at 9 a.m. here on Law and Crime. I'll see you back here on the Debrief tomorrow.